dear listeners, welcome to a new episode of Party That Party Podcast. So it's been a couple of months now since the end of the Women's World Cup, and it's been the champions, and those, despite the fact that they haven't been in the limelight, but they kind of achieved something great because it was the first international trophy for Spain in the women's category, and that's been very, very great because given the talent that Spain has at the moment, they should be one of the best national teams in the world. But there are other things which kind of took the limelight, and joining me to talk about not just Spain's Women's World Cup, but to maybe focus more on Aliti is Tom. Tom, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I've been better, you know, because it's not been easy. At the day of recording, the female team had a very good result, the male team not so much, and you have all other things in life, but luckily I'm healthy and good. So, Tom, it's your first time on the Papod, so thanks for accepting the invite.
Thank you for inviting me. We did speak a little bit. It was last year, or maybe even earlier in the year, last year, I forget. We were going to try and do something regarding the AFCON women's tournament, but I think it just got a bit too hectic with all the stuff that was going on.
Yeah, I can recall that well. At least God has given us another opportunity, and here we are to talk about women's football, at least at the center of everything.
Yes, yeah, probably more about the women's, because I think the men's needs a bit of time to remember that they are good footballers.
Yeah, I think the Papod basically was created to cover everything Aliti, not just the men's football, but just also, the women's side, because Aliti Femenino are a very good team despite the recent struggles, and we are going to touch on all of that. So I think over the years, I've not been really frequent with it because most of the time I just do an introduction, like a preview for the season, and then I do a review of the season. But this time around, I'm trying to be more consistent, at least one podcast for the women every month. Hopefully I have a lot of time to do that because I kind of do two for the men, and it's like I give them a lot of coverage and not the women. But I try to do a lot on the pitch, you know, try to give the women a lot of coverage because I think women's football, especially after the World Cup in France, is not the same women's football we know because there have been a lot of changes in it. And I think at the moment, it's at a very, very high level.
Yeah, oh, it's the fastest growing sport in the world. In the UK especially, it's like the biggest growing sport. You can't move for young girls and women just starting playing football. People playing football at all different points of their life now. It used to be always, you know, like young men or young boys going and playing football, and now it's everyone throughout their ages that are female wanting to play football, which is great.
Yeah, that's fantastic, you know, because I think those who watch the Women's World Cup kind of enjoyed it, because I really enjoyed it because I watched the one in 2017, which was the main reason why I started following women's football more closely, especially the Aliti Femenino. And watching the Women's World Cup was kind of fantastic because you have quality teams like that of Japan, a team which is multifaceted, can play in so many styles, be it counter, sitting deep and counter attacking, a mid block, can have possession, can dominate games in so many different ways with and without the ball. And then you have the Spain who dominate the ball and try to create their white triangles to progress the ball and the rest. So I kind of really enjoyed it because it was a World Cup for not just, I think it was like another landmark in which, like you said, the fastest growing sports in the UK and probably in the world, which is great because of about the evolution, everything has gone on, and hopefully we see more because I think more needs to change, especially in the mindset that many people have about the sport.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there. There's still a lot of people who don't quite want to get on board yet, but they've done lots more research into who is watching. And for a long time, I always thought it would be great to get more men's fans involved. But actually, it's more women who just weren't interested in sports are now interested in sports because of, say, England winning the Euros or getting to the World Cup final. And I imagine it's similar in other countries too. Australia's had record, you know, viewings for their women's team, especially in the semi-final and things like that. So it is getting there, and it is more people are just turning onto the sport rather than coming over from the men's side, which is really important.
Yeah, exactly. Because during the Women's World Cup, I was kind of shocked because in my home, I'm watching the game and my kid sister, who is not a great fan of football, she also comes and she's interested. And then you have the neighbors. I'm like, what are you guys watching there? Like, oh, did you watch the Nigerian game or did you watch the Zambia game? They were kind of behind Africa, giving them an African. And I think like what always happens is when an African team is playing, especially at the world stage, you have all Africans are supporting them. I'm like, wow. And they are like really, really into it. And to be honest, not just a single person, but you kind of have the ladies kind of grouping up. And despite the fact that some of the men, like you said, are not interested, but people who are actually interested in movies, like the Nigerian movies, like Nollywood, because that's something that is very popular in Africa here, but you have them maybe sacrificing some of their TV series to watch the game. I'm like, wow, that's really great. They are like, yeah, it's feminism. And I'm like, wow, that's actually very great, given that a lot of people, like you mentioned, we were not interested in the game and actually there. Because I actually have like my neighbor now, she just bought a Nigerian kid and the name behind the kid is not Iheanacho, it's not Osimhen. It's actually Plumtree. I'm like, wow, that's great.
That's cool. Yeah, and she's just gone to Saudi Arabia, which is a whole another thing to talk about on a very different podcast, probably.
For sure. Well, you have the Saudis and their money, well, who knows? So I'm talking about the World Cup, just maybe a quick glance. We all know Spain won the World Cup and there are a lot of things which happened after that which are not great, like the kiss of death, and thankfully and hopefully Rubiales has resigned, which is something which is great because even before the World Cup, I have been saying that the day he leaves Spanish football, and when I mean he, I don't just mean him, the person, but also his legacy, the people, the structure, the organization, which is something the current players are fighting for by rejecting the call up to the national team, will be a day that Spanish football is going to see the light because I believe he helped Spanish football back, especially the Women's League, for a lot of time. I think we can recall the year in which some of the players had to sign petition to the federation to talk about it, making the league being professional, and then you have the delays and the rest. So that's been a great call. But talking about the sporting things before we get to the kiss of death and everything, what do you find it? What were some of the things you found interesting in the World Cup?
Oh, I think it was just some of the players. It's our enemy's player, but Linda Caicedo was just leading up to that England Colombia match. I was just worried about her. I was just absolutely worried about her because she that goal she scored against Germany, which I think got the goal of the tournament, was my favorite goal of the tournament, and I was really worried about what they were going to try and do. And I, it was, you know, it didn't quite happen for her in the match against England, but you know, she really announced herself when I think a lot of people who maybe hadn't seen her or had maybe watched Real Madrid when she came in. I think she came in January last year, this year, sorry, last season. And I think she didn't quite people didn't quite know about her. Obviously, the people like the journalists that are on Twitter, you know, knew about her and they were excited for her, but a lot of people just didn't know what to expect. You know, this Colombian coming pretty much straight into the starting lineup for a, you know, a top tier Liga FA team. So she was, you know, really good. And a lot of the players for the Spanish national team were really good. Obviously, I was trying to support the ones that were playing for Atleti, but also playing against England, it was a bit difficult. But I am, you know, they deserve to win that match.
Yeah, for sure. Spain were the better team because they actually played really, really good. I think after the embarrassing defeat against Japan in the last game of the group stages, they kind of get their act together. And then we saw a better cohesive team who could handle counter attacks better because they were actually torn apart by Japan in the group stages. So, Tom, the next question is who was your best team? Because given the amount of praise you had for Linda Caicedo, which I think nobody will blame, no Atleti fan will blame me for that, given how brilliant she was and the goal she scored against Germany, like you said, was just phenomenal. It was top class. The way she created the space for herself, get away from the defender and the curler. Oh God, that was brilliant. Well, sadly she plays for Real. Well, so who is your team of the tournament? Who is your I know they gave the official awards, but who is your like your own personal favorite team of the tournament and also young player and player of the tournament?
I think Lauren James was probably one of my favorite players for the tournament. A shame that she didn't get to play the entire tournament, but what she was doing on the ball, like, She's like a basketball player playing football. She's just about two steps ahead and she's doing stuff. And she's like trying to shoot three pointers or she's trying to set layup. You know, she, the way she plays is so, so interesting to watch. And when everyone's on the same page with her, it's really fascinating. And it's really interesting to see what happens on the pitch, because that's the sort of thing that's going to make England a real problem against other teams in the coming tournaments. So Lauren James is one of my favourite players. But equally, Aitana Bonmatí is, you could just watch her play all day, you know?
Yeah, for sure. She's, I will not say my favorite player, but she's one of the players I really enjoy watching, because Aitana is just like, she's ahead of the curve. The way she makes every movement, the way she plays, the way she handles the ball, the way she reads the game, her every action is like, it has been pre-calculated and is being executed at the highest level. And then you have her coming and saying she kind of watch clips of high top midfielders, not like Iniesta, Xavi, and try to see what they do when they don't have the ball and when they have the ball. She's just exceptional. And it was also great seeing how maybe her coming out of Putellas' shadow, given Putellas' injury. Luckily she's back and kind of leading that Barca, the Barca feminine team, to the Champions League. She just had an incredible year for club and country.
Yeah, and I think like Spain were probably one of the teams of the tournament in that respect, is that, yeah, the way they turned it around after Japan, which it felt kind of odd. It didn't feel like that was Jorge Vilda's team that came out after that. It felt like the Japan match was definitely a Jorge Vilda performance. So I was like, oh, is someone else maybe pulling the strings here? Has someone like stepped in and said, right, this is what you need to do? Because it did feel a bit like they were a different team afterwards. And whether they were just, you know, smart enough to say, right, we need to do this, fair enough. Because they did it, and they, you know, you can see. And in the back of my mind, since before the tournament started, with the protests from the 15 that didn't want to go, I was like, I bet they win purely just to, like, for him to be, like, rubbing it in everyone's faces. Like, ha, 15 of my players said no, and I've still won the World Cup.
Yeah, it was just so fantastic. And getting back to your praises on James, and like you say, she's just like a boss. She was actually phenomenal in the game against China, I think. Watching her, she was just great. I don't know how Chelsea and Mahiz are going to handle her, but she's actually a player, a lovable player to watch. I just pray she have more minutes and maybe they incorporate her in the right way, because I believe she has a very high ceiling, and she's the better one of the James. I think she's better than her brother. I will say that for sure.
the pair of them obviously come from a very interesting footballing household, but it's, yeah, she's just so good. Like, yeah, like, and you know, to go and watch Chelsea, like, they played Roma in a preseason friendly 2 weeks ago, and she scored another great goal in that they won 3-2, very, like, very close match, but like, she scored another really good goal in that game. She had the space in front of her and she just lashed it, and it dipped just under the crossbar. But yeah, it was really good. So yeah, she's someone to watch. And yeah, like, again, all of the Barcelona players that were at the World Cup in different guises, like, who else was there? Fridolina Rolfo. I really enjoy watching her play. She's really good when she's fit and going and hungry. It was a shame that, like, and again, it's like, this is from a pure fan perspective. Like, Caroline Graham Hansen is probably one of the best footballers in the world. And when she's on her, like, game, it's incredible. So it's a bit of a shame to see Norway not reach their full potential with the players they have. And, like, you know, we've just got, like, Bilde Boerisa into Atleti, and I haven't really seen enough of her, because she didn't get, like, all the minutes for Norway, but she also didn't get a lot of minutes for Manchester United. And in the 2 years that she was there, I didn't really get to see a lot of those matches. I always try and watch as much of the women's football as I can if it's on TV, especially in the UK. But it's like, yeah, I just didn't get to see what she's about. So I'm hoping she can do something for club and country moving forwards.
Yeah, like you just mentioned, Caroline Graham Hansen, like, James, I think one of the best dribblers in women's football, and she's a top player. I can still recall the goal she scored against Emma Hayes' Chelsea in the semi-finals at the Bridge, and it was just so fantastic. So, a lot of good players there. I hope many can maybe get into a game, watch how good the women's football is at the moment, and there are a lot of good players. So, Tom, the next question is, which was your favorite game at the Women's World Cup? Because I think there were a lot of great games, a lot of fantastic games at that World Cup.
So I think the Australia game, the England Australia game, was one of my favorites. But also watching Japan beat Spain like 5-0 or whatever it was,
Four, four nil.
4-0 was it was really entertaining. Like Japan, like the goals they scored and the way they scored them was absolutely wild. So that was probably one of my favorite games. And the Colombia Germany game, because that was Germany just thought they were going to like scrape through and, you know, go into the group stages. Knockout stages, and they didn't for games like that. So I think Colombia, Germany, and Spain, Japan were my two outside favorites. But then England getting to the final the way they did against Australia was really great as a pure just emotional fan for the country that got through.
Okay, well, for me, I really enjoyed South Africa, Italy, because that game was really a bit of a roller coaster. You have Italy
Yeah,
scoring,
no, for sure.
they know they are going through, and then you have South Africa crawling their way out of the pit, and then at the last step, you have Garlana putting them in the first knockouts, making them go through for the first time in their history to the knockout stages. And that Germany versus Colombia, that was just top class. It was really, really, really good. And I think the final also as well was a very good game, because I think Spain dominated for a while, and then they dominated throughout the game, but there were spells in which they kind of struggled against England's counter-attack or England's press at time, and it was kind of good seeing tactically how both teams adjust towards to each other's changes and to kind of have the upper hand.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Tom, if I'm guessing, your best young player of the tournament was definitely Linda Caicedo.
She was the one who made the most of it. Like, she was probably one of the ones who I was excited to see that I didn't know so much about. I just hadn't really seen her for Real Madrid, because I haven't seen any matches really. So she was someone who really impressed me.
Well, if you have been listening to the papo, you know about Yash, and Yash was basically here for last time we talked about women's football, and he kind of writes a lot on women's football, and he has been of a lot of praise for Linda Caicedo, which was not surprising how good she performed. It's just that I was kind of, let me say, it's like, you know how good she is, but seeing what she does, you're like, wow, this is just amazing. Because the goal against Germany, I can recall my neighbor's, sorry, my neighbor, which I said bought the plum tree, my gave Jesse. Her mom was like, that girl is good. So when I told her, she was like, for real, at the world stage, and you are doing something like that, she was just so out of this world. It was just amazing seeing her do that at the world stage.
Yeah, and I think that's like, so, you know, like Caroline Weir went to Real Madrid last year, and I knew what she could do, and I was really excited to see her, you know, get lots of good goals and minutes and assists for the team last year. Obviously, as a Atleti fan, I wasn't happy that she was doing that, but for just, you know, I'm like part Scottish, so like seeing her do all that stuff was really great. And for that reason, I sort of my like the brief view I had on Real Madrid wasn't really focused on anyone else.
Oh, okay, I see. Linda Caicedo aside, the other player who kind of really impressed me, because I knew nothing about her before the World Cup, but after watching her play for Haiti, was Melchi, I think, Dumoni. She was really, really good.
Yeah.
I think for a country like Haiti, she offered a lot. Her dribbles, the way she was able to facilitate the attacks, progression, she was just amazing. And I also discovered that she signed for Lyon. Which I was like, wow, you have one of the best female teams of all the female teams or teams in female football, and they are signing. Because I think her ceiling is really, really scary. Because physically, she's really, really great. And then technically, she's just amazing. If she just sorts some things out, like maybe decision making, I believe she goes straight to the top, because it was just fantastic watching her play.
Yeah, oh, 100%. And yeah, she signed for Lyon before the World Cup because they really knew that was going to happen. And I think she was really, they just won like the like local French cup, I think, like the not the Charity Shield, but like the whatever the version of that is, against, I think it was against Paris Saint-Germain. And she, like, I think she was great in that for all intents of, you know, for what I've heard.
Yeah, that was great. So overall, I think it was a successful World Cup, which New Zealand and Australia kind of host, because it's not disappointing. The crowd was really, really good. And I really enjoyed when the crowd was really underdog, because it was really, really great. And they did not disappoint. The atmosphere, a lot of positive vibe are in and around the stadiums and from the games. I think the officiating too was something I enjoyed. And the way they used VAR there was really, really amazing. What's your opinion on that?
I felt it was a pretty fair World Cup in for technology. And like, yeah, I mean, you'd always get some refs that maybe aren't used to officiating at a really high level, that, you know, at that level, obviously. But I think it was good overall. I think it was, everything was sort of used correctly, and the VAR was pretty quick. Yeah, so I think it was, you know, it was good enough. And obviously the goal line technology helped Sweden against the USA. So yeah, I think it was pretty successful all in all.
Yeah, it was a successful World Cup, and just like the Euro a year before, it was also very, very successful. And same for the AFCON. I believe there's a lot, like we said at the beginning, it's fast growing and a lot of fans are getting into it. And I just pray the positive vibe in and around women's football stays, because one of the, not comparing to the men's game, but one of the negative about the men's game is a lot of the negativity which most of the fans bring. And I hope that that doesn't get into the women's football, because at the moment, the fan culture, or from what I've seen most of the time, is really, really great. I think as like the Aletis win last season, at the end of last season against Real Madrid, I believe they were, you had like a healthy rivalry, and maybe fans just trash talking and nothing more to the level of what we see on social media when it concerns the men's team.
Yeah, like that is one of the reasons I really can't support a lot of it anymore, is sadly it's the fans that get involved with the racism, homophobia, anti-Semitism, especially in the UK, certain teams, and it's, yeah, like sexism as well. So it's just a part of the women's game that isn't there, thankfully. And the fans are getting better. They're not, I'd say that the sort of the chants and the songs for a lot of the players and the clubs aren't maybe as big as the ones for the, you know, the men's teams, but it's, you know, it's, they've had a head start. The men's teams have had a head start in doing that. So.
Well, hopefully a lot of positivity, like I mentioned. So the Spain squad that won the World Cup, you had two elite players there, which was kind of great. And Tom, I want to ask, what's your opinion on the kiss of death? Because I think that's what has been the center of attention, which in my opinion should not be the case. The people who are supposed to be at the center of attention should be the players who won the World Cup, because they achieved a great thing. But so what, there are a lot of things have unfolded surrounding the kiss of death. You have a change in the national team. You don't have view that is no more. Realist has resigned, which those are actually very good changes, but I think the players are still demanding more of structural change from that. So what's your opinion on everything surrounding some of the changes who are ongoing in the Spanish Federation at the moment, resulting from the kiss of death?
Yeah, it's you know, the some of the things that have happened have been good. Obviously Rubiales and Jorge Vilda are gone. Both were sadly allowed to resign rather than be fired because of their actions. So that's, you know, that means that the Federation is not doing its job quite as good as a lot of people would like, because they were afforded that luxury. But the new manager for the women's national team was Jorge Vilda's assistant. So a lot of the players, as you said, are still not prepared to come back, because it's not just two people that were deciding all of these things. It was the whole structure and the hierarchy around it that put everything into place and allowed all of the things to happen over years and years and years. I mean, the previous manager, whose name escapes me right now, was in the job for 25 years or something like that. And it was only players like, you know, Vero Boquet. Oh, I'm saying that wrong. But she spoke out in 2015 and they got this guy fired, or was allowed to resign. I can't remember. Only for the same thing to happen 8 years later, because Jorge Vilder was in the job for 8 years. So it's, you know, there is so many structural issues still that haven't been addressed. And that's what the, I think it's 80 or so players, aside a few, have said that they aren't going to come back until that is different. So there isn't a squad selection for, I think it's Sweden and someone else that they're supposed to be playing next weekend. And the national team manager had to cancel the press conference that was due to be at 4 o'clock on Friday. But she was at the Atletico game because they're trying to do like a third list of players. So it would be interesting to see who is going to come along and say they are happy to be included. Because it's not, for me, this isn't a way to get recognised by your national team manager, because, you know, 25 other players have said they won't turn up. That doesn't mean you're doing better than them. That just means that the opportunity is coming in a handicapped kind of way.
Well, I think it's actually kind of sad because we kind of hope all these players can get in harmony and we can get the right structural changes which is needed at the Spanish Federation, because, like you said, moving on from a guy who has been there for 25 years and he was being sacked for something, and then you have another guy which is basically behaving not really good towards the female player, not giving him privacy rights, which is actually sad. And then 8 years later, we have heard numerous reports concerning Vilder doing something same, and then you have the guy at the head backing him up, and now it's a time for a change, and I will bleed, and it will be fantastic to see all of these players being in harmony, because if they can do that and we have the structural changes which are needed, I think that would be fantastic, because going forward, you kind of have what Aitana has been saying and also Putelas has been saying. Their job is just to play football, but given how things are at the moment, they have to fight for the future generation. They don't want the future generation to go through the same thing they are going now, because it's like you want your profession as a footballer to play football, but now you can't play football because you have a lot of things which are not being done right, a lot of things which are not even going right. Like, for example, the start of the season for Liga F, what happens? You have the players calling strike because the proposition the league made and for salaries and everything, they could not find an agreement. And that comes to be a normalism in Spain. I think it was also similar for the men's side, where you have Rubiales and Tebas not agreeing on dates for when the league will start and the rest. So having those structural changes would kind of be good for the present and the future, because Liga F, we all know, as we watch it, has a lot of potential given the amount of talent which is there.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and obviously, as you just said, like, they delayed by a week because of the players who still aren't getting the minimum general salary in Spain. That I think it's like 25 or 26,000 euros a year. The players across the league, probably in the lower teams, without such big financial backing from the men's club sides, you know, they're not earning as much as they, as friends who maybe just have a job in a, I don't know, in a shop or whatever, is earning on a full salary. Like, you know, they aren't earning that, and that, you know, when you look at the disparity between the men's and the women's in salaries, it's so huge. You know, so a lot of them have to sign on these weird endorsement deals or make sure that they've got a good amount coming from boot sponsors, because, you know, they aren't earning the money that they need to survive. To so much as, like you said, like, there's so much activism that they still have to do. They have to talk about growing the game, they have to talk about why it's different and why they aren't earning as much money, and all of these things they're constantly having to talk about, everything but football.
Exactly. Like, for example, like I may have been mentioning, Spain won the World Cup, but what happened? That's not even a major headline. The major headline is something else. So hopefully the players can get behind, they can all come in accord like they did, I think, a couple of years back, to make the league kind of professional. Because I think it's not been long that Liga F, just the naming came into place, the TV deal came into place. Because prior to that, you have a lot of times where they have had agreements and there's no TV deal, there's nothing, which everything is going in, it's like in helter skelter, just like a scatter something. So hopefully they can come again together for this to actually come in place. Like you mentioned, for the salary cases and the rest, because this is they are actually playing at one of the highest, let me say the highest leagues, or best, one of the best leagues, sorry, but not the most financially strong league in the world. So I think the Federation can do more to strengthen it. And I was kind of happy when I saw Liga F introducing an application earlier this season, which is great. And I will put the link at the when we will be talking about the podcast, so that you can actually download it if you are interested, because it kind of keeps you up to date with the league and highlights and the rest. So that was kind of one of the steps taken closer into making the league kind of whole. Coming to Aleti, I think there's no better place to start talking about Aleti than talking about the cup victory against Real Madrid, because I know the league has started and Aleti beat Aleti Club Bilbao by 3-0, but we'll talk about that. But first, what's your view on Manolo Cano coming in halfway through the season and then ending the season on a high by winning a trophy against a rival like Real Madrid?
It was great. It was from we'd won a cup trophy against Barcelona a few years ago, and it was great to win that trophy. But again, like, and it sounds like a downer, a sad thing, that we probably Real Madrid or us were in that final because Barcelona were expelled from the competition, which, you know, I'm not going to sit there and talk about that, because but it is a factor, you know, like Jay-Z wasn't registered properly, or no, it was she'd picked up a booking again for Madrid CFF and was you know, fielded illegally. So, you know, they got disqualified from the competition. So yeah, we won that competition, and I'm not going to take anything away from that, because we beat, you know, we came back in the last like couple of minutes of the match. Was it Benini scored that incredible goal and we won on penalties? Like, you know, we won that game against a club rival, you know, so that is really sweet. But yeah, as we sort of spoke before we started recording, that the real rivalry has always felt Atletico versus Barcelona, not the new El Clasico, because it's, you know, Real Madrid's only been a team for four seasons or three seasons or something like that. And they were, you know, they just bought their way in, which is very Real Madrid.
Exactly. Very Real Madrid. Very Florentino Perez. I'm sorry. I'm not really a good lover of Real Madrid, and I can't say positive things. A lot of positive things against them. Sorry. I can't say a lot of positive things for them. And it was actually good winning the final like we did, because I think there were two goals up and I was like, oof, it's like these guys are going to win this. And then you have Estafa Banini's free kick. Oh, that's a legendary goal. I think, in my opinion, as an Atleti fan, that free kick from Banini is right up there with the goal I think Miranda scored at the Bernabeu, because it gave a lot of joy. I can recall shouting, just have a pour of emotions. I know Atleti has won trophies, like they've won the league a couple of times, but winning that was actually great. And like you just rightly mentioned, the real game, or the biggest game in Spanish football is Atleti versus Barca. But like you said, Real Madrid have kind of bought their way in, and they have the financial backing, and they are spending a lot, which is maybe good for the league, given that the league kind of have an audience. But buying their way in was not really good, because I think at the time you had a little bit of resistance towards that buying, if I'm not mistaken. But Atleti versus Barca was the biggest game, because I think you had those years where Atleti are edging Barca to win the league. I think those three leagues in a row Atleti won, and it was kind of fantastic, because the competition, the rivalry for the compete for the title was good, but Atleti kind of fell off and a lot of things happened, and which we are going to talk about that. But like I said, that win was actually great, and despite it coming at the fact that Barcelona made a mistake which kind of cost them, but kind of gave a final which was kind of nice for my Atleti's perfect. And it was also great seeing the Atleti's faithful getting a reward for being under the rain, still singing, despite the fact that the team was 2-0 down, and then going to penalties and winning was just so fantastic. I think that game was actually good, and it kind of made me more in love with Atleti. So talking about this season, and we are going to talk about the problems Atleti have been having over the years, because we are going from a team who won the league three times in a row to a team who has not even qualified for the Champions League. in the last three seasons. So it's kind of shocking. I'm sure it's like, what has happened here? So, Tom, can you just give us what has been the main issue, or to those who don't follow Alexi Femenino that closely and maybe are interested after listening to this podcast, what has been the issue for Alexi Femenino recently?
Well, I mean, anyone listening to the podcast will be very familiar with the men's team and, you know, and Diego Simeone, who's been in charge for, is it 12 years now for the men's side, I think, maybe even nearly 13. And yet we've had five managers, more or less five managers in five seasons at Atleti Femenino. And you can see the, it's such a results-based industry, the women's game. Like, there's such a short turnaround and it's, people need the immediate response. So you lose a game, you buy a player. It's almost that quick in some respects for a lot of the teams that can afford to do so. And Atleti did really well until Barcelona really dug their heels in and said, right, we need to stop losing the leagues. And, you know, and they haven't stopped. They haven't looked back. They've won four league titles in a row. They've won a load of cups. They've won the Champions League twice. Whereas every time Atleti got near the Champions League, Wolfsburg would knock us out. And, you know, and that was the issue. I went to one of the Wolfsburg matches, I think. I think we got beaten like 5-0 at home, maybe more. And it was, you could just see how far away we were, despite winning the league the year before or beating Barcelona. And it's, yeah, it was just such a, it's such a competition that you want to do so well in. But the league wasn't quite up to the standards for us to be able to play these other European teams. And, you know, and that came with a lot of players after the World Cup in 2019. A lot of players left, a lot of players came in. We tried to get a lot more international players in. And it just, we just didn't get a really settled squad for probably until Manolo Cano came in last season. And the players we had were actually really good, but... Oscar, what his name was, Lopez, Oscar Fernandez.
Yeah,
couldn't. Oscar Fernandez. He couldn't quite get them to gel. The season that he had with them, he pretty much did a different starting lineup for almost every match. So Manolo Cano coming in and settling it a little bit is why he was rewarded with another contract to the end of this year, this season. So yeah, it was just so many managers, so many players, and it just didn't feel very settled, and especially in the fluid nature of women's football, where players will maybe only have one or two seasons at a club before they move on. It's something that we needed to build on. It's something that we needed to really build a team and a core team and a core of players, sorry. But it just didn't happen. And we just kept looking to what we could do about results in the immediacy. And we fired managers. And we then brought managers back, you know? So it was, it's been a tumultuous few years, but there have been highlights, like we said, about the two sort of cup wins against Barcelona and Real Madrid respectively in the last sort of, was it two or three seasons, we've won two different cups. So yeah, you know, it's not the league form we would like, you know, not getting to the Champions League, but it does feel like the corner is slowly turning to have a settled squad and just get some results back on the board and get into the Champions League again, or at least attempt to qualify for the Champions League once we get into second or third spot.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's true that we have won some trophies recently, but like you said, in the league, despite the fact that the league has kind of improved, but as compared to, let's say, our rivals in the Champions League, we were not at the level, and trying to match that by bringing a lot of internationals kind of went sideways. And I think I can recall a lot of criticism coming from the media about the fact that a lot of outsiders were brought in, and then you have the next season a lot of, let me say, players who from the league were brought in, and then it just kind of went helter-skelter. It's like Alexis' transfer strategy kind of went through the window, and then you have a couple of seasons after we are losing players like Esther to Real, Kenty Robles to Real, and we even lost Jenny. So it was kind of hurtful seeing so many of those players leave, because those were the players who were actually the core of the team when we won the league. We won the league three times in a row, and it was great because if they were the core of the team, they had been in the team for so long, which was kind of fantastic. And I can also recall we kind of achieved our first, I think, Champions League quarterfinals for the first ever time. I think it was against Chelsea, and that game, I think that day we were unlucky because we deserved to beat Chelsea. But well, it is what it is in the past. And like Thomas already said, we have struggled because we have not had stability. Firstly, five managers in the last 5 years. That's like a manager a season. And secondly, we have not had a stable squad or a core. It's true that there have been players like Ajibade, you have Ludmila, you have Lola, she went and came back. Same for, I think, Menayo, who had a loan spell in the Scottish League. But we have not had a core. That means you cannot see the team and say that, yes, these players have been here for so and so years, in which somebody can build something. And Manolo Kanu came in, kind of maybe made the team gel together. And sadly, we could not achieve the goal of qualifying for the Champions League. Yet again, another failure, because that was the objective at the start of the season. And then you have Aleti ending the season on a high by winning the trophy, which I talked about, which is the Copa de la Reina against Real Madrid, which was just fantastic. But then again, the team are far from where they used to be. But in order to achieve that, we need to have consistency. And like Tom rightly mentioned, Simeone has that. And we have him in the case of, let's use the case of Molina, which we talked about just before the podcast, about the fact that Simeone had to like drill him in his how he wants things to be done. And now we have Molina becoming the best right back in the league. And Aleti, that's not there because you had this in and going. And also another issue is with the short-term contracts, players signing 1 or 2 years contracts, which is not healthy because you have these other clubs who are like financially healthy and players on short-term contracts, they can lure them away. Like, for example, look at Maitan. She was, in my opinion, our best player last season. But what happens? She had, her contract was up and she did not renew, and she was off to America. So it's not been good and it's not been the best. So Tom, given all the struggles Aleti has had, we have mentioned, what are some of the things you think we can like kind of iron going forward?
Well, I think we've got a good squad. So having players like Ludmila back in, it'll be interesting to see how she plays, because she's been out for a little while now with the ACL injury. She has started training. She's not back in the match day squad yet, but she is such an explosive player. And I think for a lot of the time, a lot of teams didn't quite know whether they should worry about her or not worry about her. But then that also happened with the managers we had. They were like, well, we could just play her up top and have people pass balls through the back line and find her, or we try and do something else so that we're not just doing the same thing all the time, which I understand. But it just meant that she was kind of not really being utilized to one of her like real strong suits, which is going behind the defense, picking up the ball and scoring. So it'll be interesting to see how she comes back into the squad with the players that we have. Like Sheila Guijarro Garcia scored 2 goals yesterday. She looked good for those, you know, a header and a tap in. So I'm excited to see more from her. Gabby Garcia in the middle. I like a tall midfielder. She's like 1.80 meters or something like this. So having someone next to Lacey Santos, who is about 1.50 meters, is always going to be good, because, you know, you need someone who can win those aerial battles. And we have got some really good players like in defence and on the wings, like Banini and even Ivaro. Like, these players are going to be really, if we can keep them fit and keep them playing well, they're going to have a great season. The only issue, one of the main issues, which I guess is for women's football across Europe, is how quickly some of these leagues are coming back in after the World Cup. A lot of them haven't had time to relax and, you know, just come back from their federations to before they've had to start playing matches again. So it'll be interesting to see how these new players, who should gel a bit better. I think instead of doing like getting like 10 players in, we've only got maybe 4 or 5. So there is a little bit more of a, there should be easier to integrate them into the teams. Like, you know, Anna Chernogorsevich, I'm terrible saying that name. She's really good, but she can play in lots of different positions. So I think they brought her on yesterday and she went up top into the nine, or even on the like one of the attacking three. So she'll be interesting to see where she plays for the team. And she's experienced in the league, so that's good. Same as the everyone else, I think we brought in aside Bilde Borisa, is experienced in the league, so they have an idea of what they're getting into, which again is really important. I mean, you see that across lots of leagues, that the players they bring in, they don't, maybe there's some differences league to league and club to club that means that when they start, it just isn't quite, they take a bit of time to settle in. Like we said about the Simeone thing earlier, about working with the players, and I think that's, sometimes you do need that, but if you really played in that league, there should be, it should be a bit of a quicker integration. So I'm excited to see what we can do. I really like Lacey Santos. The goal she scored against England in the World Cup was really good, and I was happy, but I was sad again because, you know, I conceded a goal. But she's always been great. Her and Maitan last season and the season before, and, you know, they were really good together, and I really liked the dynamics of someone winning the ball and having playing to her for her to then move on up the pitch. So, you know, if I want to see Lacey Santos have a good season again, because she is a really important player for the club. And I want to see players like Carmen Manao just have a consistent season again. And because she was great. She scored some great goals when I remember seeing her in like 2018, 2019. She was scoring goals from the edge of the box, like lashing them in with her left foot. And I was, you know, like, it almost like sometimes players don't have any reason to do that, and there she was, and just hit it, and it just goes, and you're like, wow, okay, she is a good player. And it's the little bits of injuries that a lot of them have had, just always, there's always that setback. So I am excited to see what a lot of these players can do this year and how consistent the squad stays, because with having a big squad and a lot of good players, the rotation can really affect the mood, the performances. So I want to see how it works with what the players that we have this season.
Yeah, you just talked about Carmen Menayo and how she used to score a lot of goals, and she did that playing as a left back where she could attack more. And you just talked, and you remind me of Olga Carmona in the World Cup, where she had a lot of those strikes on the edge of the box looking for a goal, and she finally had it in the final, which was great. And hopefully, like you said, we can see a more steady and balanced squad, because we have a good squad at the moment. And one of the players in preseason which kind of caught the eye was Gabby, because, like you said, she kind of is like a tool midfielder, a ball winner, somebody who can allow Lacey to kind of have an impact for that up the pitch, like not dropping deep. And it was quite interesting because Oscar Fernandez last season in preseason, he did something fantastic against Bayern, where Aleti faced difficulties in like progressing the ball and also creating chances, but he kind of used in the build-up maybe my 10 higher up, and then you had Banini and Lacey dropping deep, and they were causing loss, all sorts of problems for Bayern. But when the season started, I don't know where that plan went into. Well, but hopefully, like you said, we want to see Lacey have a consistency, because she's just fantastic. When she's on the ball, she makes things happen for Aleti, and Banini is another, which if those two can get in contact or create a lot of things, then that's great. Because in preseason, it seems like Manolo has been using like a 4-3-3 with, you have a ball winner, and then you have Lacey and Banini playing as like 2-8. And if those triangles, when they click in preseason, it was actually very, very good to watch. And that is something I'll be looking forward to this season, because if those two can actually be on the same wavelength, and we are sure they will be able to maybe create chances for the attackers we have, because you have Eva Navarro, who came from the World Cup and is also great. You also have Mata Cardona doing great. And now if you have the likes of Ludmila and Rashidu, who are players who can run behind, and if those two can actually link up and actually play those balls in behind for Ludmila and Rashida, I can recall there was a time in the league where I think when we play against the bigger teams and they are afraid of the pace of those two behind, and spamming long balls to them was kind of the game plan, like you mentioned. And at times it was actually good, because I think those two are their best when that is happening. And you mentioned for the center backs, I think the center back, it's an area where I think we don't have a lot of depth there, but I believe Menayo has did a great job last season there, and she played in the season, and she did a fantastic job in preseason. And having Lola in goal is kind of great, because I can recall there was a time when Lola kind of struggled with the fans, and where fans were like, yeah, we lost this because of her. But it's kind of seeing her being the captain and the leader. We also have Van Dongen, who is a leader on and off the pitch, and we can all recall the footage which was shared on social media when she spoke to her teammates during the Copa de la Reina final against Real Madrid. So I think we have a good squad, and we have made the signings. We are used to the league because you have Gabi, you have Sheila Gujaro, which came from Villarreal, and she, like you mentioned, scored a brace on her debut, which is just so fantastic. And I think the fullbacks are a position where I think we are covered, because we are very good fullbacks who are good on the ball, fullbacks who can drive with the ball forward, which is just fantastic. And we signed those two fullbacks from the league, and which shows that our signings in recent season has been great. But the issue now is keeping those players, because we just lost Irene to United, and it's true, yes, we have Vilde, the Borussia, who just came in, and she's kind of new to the league, but I've asked about her from Yash, who is very, when it comes to Wusu, he's very fantastic in there, and he has a lot of praise for her. He says she's like basically the player who kind of find the pass where people can't do that, and she's more of a, you have a first and second phase player rather than the final third player. And we are going to say that she made her debut in the 3-0 win over Athletic Club. So we have talked about the players and the managers and how they are incoming and outgoing. We all know at the start of each season, Athletic Femenino's aim is to qualify for the UEFA Women's Champions League. So seeing given the squad, and it's true, yes, it's just one game, given the squad and Aletias at the moment, what's your opinion? Do you think that is attainable given Levante has just been knocked out of the Women's Champions League qualifying rounds, and that means they will fully focus on the league. So they are obviously a contender. Do you think Aletias actually will achieve that goal this season? Excuse me.
I think they will. I think there's enough there to be able to do it. It depends what happens on everyone around you. Like, you know, we're top of the league because we scored 3 goals yesterday compared to Real Madrid and Barcelona only scoring 2 goals in each of their games, respectively. So we're top of the league. Or nearly. I don't know if results have changed today, but because we have 1 goal extra.
No, we are still top. We are still top.
So, you know, that's fine. Like, first game in, we're top of the league. And that's going to be that's the important thing. I think, like we spoke earlier, like, we have to win against the teams that we lost or dropped points against last year. Our tough games should only be Real Madrid and Barcelona. They should be the only tough games we have. So we have 4 tough games this season. That should be it. We should be looking to get points off everyone else, because Barcelona aren't going to drop points. Real Madrid probably won't drop points. So we have to be taking every chance we can get. And I think we can get Champions League this year. I feel like Levante, I don't know the full ins and outs because it's really contentious. But like, their manager, who used to be Atleti's manager, just brought in his partner to the playing staff. So for those who don't know, like, Jose Sanchez Vera is in a relationship with Angela Sosa. And she left to go to Real Betis. Someone else I speak to on Twitter about this said that it was a bit of an issue while Atleti, because they got together whilst they were both in Atleti. And now she's just gone to Levante. So that's not a good look. So I think there might be a little bit of disharmony in the squad. I don't know. I don't know enough. I haven't seen enough journalism or, you know, comments about it yet, but I only noticed that she was there yesterday. And I was like, oh, okay. So teams like Levante that should be doing more might struggle for things like that, you know, because that is a big decision to do, to bring a player that is in a relationship with the manager into the squad, despite how good she is, or how good she was anyway. That is a big thing to do in a club that was trying to get Champions League football and was in the Champions League qualifying. So I think Atleti has a very good chance, if teams like that fall apart and stutter in their earlier part of the season. We just have to drive forwards and win every game and try and concede less and less. Like, and as you said, I always felt Lola was a bit susceptible to letting really simple goals in when she didn't need to. Like, if it's a good hit, it's a good hit. You can't do a lot about it. But she was really, she would make some mistakes or easy goals would go in, and that really affected Atleti as well, I think, when the defence and the goalkeeper weren't really working as well as they could be. But I think she's, as you said, I think she's come back into a lot of confidence and working on those mistakes. And I think, yeah, we've been a lot stronger in the latter part of last season and the start of this season. So, yeah, I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good. We're going to be Champions League qualifiers next year, for sure.
Well, that's a lot of optimism. Well, I'm still not sure. It's true, after one game, I am very happy, especially given that we beat the club, like we beat Athletic Club at home. It's true that they have been downhill in recent seasons, but they are a tough opponent. So, not actually easy, and scoring 3 past them, it's not so easy, but let's see how things go, because like in recent seasons, it's like, yeah, we have dropped points against the teams we should be winning. And I think scoring goals, it was also an issue, because Aliti, I think when Stats Bomb posts the stats about the women's football, you kind of have XG, you have Barcelona in the league of their own, and then the next is Aliti, and you are like, we have created so many good scoring chances, but what is happening? You come to actual goal scored, we are not even the second, and we are not also actually taking our chances. And defensively, last season, we were actually kind of fumbling, because it's like you have a team who creates a lot of good chances and a team who also gives chances. So I find this not balance is something I think Manolo Kano has spoken about over the summer, actually in the preseason games. And you have the game against Milan, like I told you just before. We started recording, because I do on the PowerPoint, we do a lot of translation for the coaches' press conference, especially for the women team, because we are trying to give them exposure, especially to the Atleti fans. And you have him talking about the fact that he was very happy with the performance. We won against Milan 1-0 in a preseason friendly cup, and he was actually very happy with the performance, because Milan were actually very stubborn, but we were able to contain them. When I mean contain them, we were able to kill their counter attacks before it began. We pressed counter press aggressively, and then we were also patient and we waited for the moment, and we scored a fantastic team goal, and the goal was just so brilliant from Lacey, and that kind of gave me vibes that yes, because a lot of teams who will be playing in the league will actually be defending in a compact block, and they will try to hit us on the counter, and we can be able to kill their counter and then continue creating those chances. And with Sheila, who scored a brace, I believe a lot of goals can come, because we have goals in Lumila, who is actually recovering. I hope she'll be fit. And then if Ajibade can actually start scoring, because I believe she is a very good player when it comes to a lot of things, creating chances for herself and others. But when it comes to finishing, I think she's a little bit wanting in that area. So if those things can come into play, then I think I think Atleti will attain their goal for this season, which is to qualify for the Champions League. And who knows, maybe we'll win another cup also, because you also have the Copa del Rey and also the Super Cup, which will not be easy given that Barcelona is among. And like you said, Atleti has some tough games this season, and I'm counting. You have Barca, you have Real, and then I think the game against Levante, and also some away games like trips to Atleti, to Bilbao, to face Atleti Club, or to San Sebastian to face Real Sociedad. And then I think you have Madrid FF, who are not an easy opponent. So those are some of the games I think are a little struggle, especially when they're playing away. So Tom, I'm sure you have watched some Atleti preseason games. So it's difficult to put down or pinpoint how Atleti are going to play each season, because it's always unsure what will happen. Like we mentioned, 5 coaches in 5 years is quite a lot. So can you maybe give us what do you think Atleti and the approach Atleti will use this season?
Well, I think, you know, I guess it's still early days for having the new players, and, you know, we only played, I think, 3 or 4 preseason matches, and we won a couple. We lost one against Milan, but we won also against Milan, and we beat Liverpool. So I think we just have to sort of you know, as long as we can progress the balls out wide and cross in, really, like, it sounds really simple, just aiming for the strikers in the middle from wide areas. I think that's going to be one of the really important parts, especially in a 4-3-3, making sure those two up top go wide and the midfield support well, I think, you know, like Lacey can score those outside the box goals, and Benini can as well. So we need to be really focusing on a strong sort of five in and around the box to be able to get the goals in. And it happened yesterday. So I think more of the same, really, to continue through the season. Obviously, you know, figuring out challenges as they appear. But yeah, I think just to start, to continue doing that, especially as there is a bunch of new players coming in. So yeah, it sounds very simple, but I hope it is as simple as it sounds.
Well, hopefully, like you said, it's as simple as it sounds, because I'm sure you know how it's not easy, maybe executing certain instruction, because I think it's one thing to have a game plan and another thing for the players executing, and we know they'll be off this. May we pray on our off this, we can still have players who can make something out of nothing, like Lacey, like Banini. So we are hoping on that. And actually, I think, like I mentioned before, we'll face a lot of teams who are going to like concede possession. That means they're going to allow us to have much of the ball. And now, like you said, making use of that ball and also trying to contain them would actually be great, because we will need to create a lot of chances like we have been doing in the past, and having someone who can actually finish those chances, like I mentioned, would be fantastic. So we have talked about Aleti struggles, some of the things that Aleti can maybe do to sniffle them out, to clear them out, and maybe strengthen the team, and we are happy with the squad we have this season. So Tom, just maybe to put you on the fence here, what's your position for the season for Aleti, for the league, for the Copa de la Reina, and also for the Super Cup?
Are we in the Super Cup? I don't know. I never know how they figure out the teams that go into the Super Cup. But
the format for the Super Cup is basically, I think you have a semi-finals and finals, and you have the two finalists of the Copa de la Reina, and then you have the top two in the league. So if maybe the top two are the two finalists, then the third and the fourth place, and then can go into it.
There we go. So yeah, so I'd like to think that we can get into the final of the Copa de la Reina and the Supercopa for the two rounds. I'm pretty sure we can get into the finals. And I'm pretty sure that depending on our opponent, you know, if it's Barcelona and they're on fire, then it's not going to be as easy. But I think we can actually still score some goals against them. They looked vulnerable yesterday, but like Madrid CFF couldn't really, you know, punish them in the way they did last season somehow. So I think that I'd like to think they will be finalists in both of those competitions. And I think we can achieve second place in the league. I think that we can beat Real Madrid. I think that we can beat Levante. I think we can beat all of the teams outside of Barcelona. I think on our day, if the team gels well and the results and the form stays, I think the team can give them a really good game, maybe even take some points off them at home. But again, they will be the biggest rival, and I think they'll still win the league, but I'd like to think that we can get a lot closer this year and a good second position for us.
Okay, well, a lot of optimism from you, to be honest, because I'm not so optimistic. Finishing second ahead of Real Madrid, I take that every day. I take that every day. Beating them, home are they?
Well, I think
yes, go on.
I think Real Madrid, like they didn't look as strong yesterday, and I think again they've had a lot of turnover. Like, you know, Esther's gone to the NWSL, and they've got some players. Like Hayley Raso is good, but she didn't play for Man City much. So they were happy to kind of let her go almost, because they just didn't use her, which is their fault. So I think that team is still it's full of a lot of very good individual players. And I think that if they gel as quick as we have, it will be a problem. But if it takes time, especially for players coming to a new country, and like players like Caroline Moller, she just didn't, like, she hasn't performed as well as she could have over the last few years. She's a great, very good player, but I don't think she even made the Denmark squad for the World Cup. So it's that's some of the issues I think that they face, as well as what Atleti faces, you know, for just a team in transition, especially moving forwards. So yeah, it'll be an interesting season, I think, and it's going to be a long season, especially after the World Cup, and the Olympics coming up and things like this. So
yeah, I think
it's going to be interesting.
Like I think you really said it's going to be an interesting year. Really, I think you mentioned that most of the players do not have a lot of rest, because I was shocked when the World Cup finished and Aleti had resisted a couple of weeks after Aleti starts preseason, and then I'm seeing in games, I'm seeing Lacy, I'm seeing Banini. I'm like, oh, they have not had a lot of rest, but they have looked sharp in the first game they played, which is actually positive. And about Real Madrid, well, like you said, dunking on them every, I take that every season. Even if we play, we are as bad as they come, but we get a result against them. I take that every season. And as for Barca, well, I think Manolo Cano's game plan last season against Barca was really, really interesting, because he's man-for-man, high-press orienting and forcing Barcelona into turnovers and also making them go long was actually very good. It's just that, well, execution was a problem, because when Atleti actually won the ball back in decisions and we could not punish them, I'll really be interested to see how he can tackle Barcelona this season, because I really like what he did in the first 25 minutes of that game before Barcelona. It's true, Barcelona kind of started going long and trying to use the pace of Oshuala, but I think Aleti handled it very well. Just that after the first goal, I think kind of killed the morale. And then the second half mistakes, I think overall the game plan was spot on, but execution not so much. So a lot of positivity from you, which has infected me, and I believe we can achieve something meaningful this season, like actually have the consistency we have lacked over the previous season. Because actually last season we started the league very well, but I think after the fourth or fifth match day, we kind of started going down here, which wasn't ideal. So hopefully we kind of concentrate and then have what we need this season. So, Tom, there are some play. I think at least it would not be fair to talk about Aleti without talking about Aleti. Talk about Aleti Femenino without talking about Aleti Femenino B, because they actually achieved promotion to go into a higher year, and their first game against, I think, Alaves, they won 1-0. And then you have some players there who are actually very, very good, because you have somebody, I think you have Yolanda Sierra, who has been there, and she's actually a very, very good player. And I've seen her a couple of times for the national team, that thing, the under-18 side, and she's actually good. And talking about, I'm sorry, we almost forgot. What is your opinion on Wifi, on Lucia Morel? Because last season, she was just fantastic. She was basically averaging almost a goal per game. So what's your opinion? We cannot finish this podcast without talking about her.
Yeah, the important part of every household now, Wifi. From what I've seen, again, I didn't see a huge amount last year just due to volunteering with a women's team over here. So a lot of the matches that weren't being televised, I couldn't see anyway. Normally I can try and find a way to watch them, but I was out of the house a lot of the time when they were playing. She's been really good, and she obviously came back. I think she was part of the under 18 squad that won the European Cup, I think, for the national team. So she was part of that. So her and is it Andrea Medina, isn't it? The pair of them. Yeah. So the pair of them, they're obviously very good players. So it's good that we've got them closer to the first team. I don't know a huge amount about like the second team, the B team, because again, it's like a lot of things, especially being further away, it's harder to find the information about, aside maybe seeing results on Twitter. So I haven't really seen a huge amount myself about that team. So I don't know a huge amount about some of the younger players coming through. But yeah, the few that I have seen, like we've scored some good important goals for us last year. So long may it continue, especially in a team that needs to keep rotating to be in two cup competitions in the league. So it's important that all of our players are ready to go at a moment's notice, because one of the biggest issues in women's football are ACL injuries, and they can happen at any time, sadly. So, you know, we need to make sure we've got a very good squad ready to go in case someone does pick one up.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, the B team has actually been doing fantastic, a very, very good job. And they won promotion, like I mentioned, and they won their opening first game. And there are lots of players there who featured in the friendly, I think, against Milan, which we lost, because we kind of played the final against Milan, and 2 days later we are playing against Milan again. So kind of some rotation, and you kind of you saw a lot of them there, and they were actually decent. And I think despite the gap level, you have a lot of players there, which in my opinion can actually do well in the first division should they get loan moves. But staying there to kind of help the team achieve more promotion will be great. Tom, to be honest, it's fantastic having you here, and obviously, like you talked about volunteering your women's team, you have been keeping me up to date with it, and you guys have actually been doing very great. So just to maybe give a little shout out to the team, can you tell us more about like how far you guys have been this season?
So we are, I think we've played 6 games and we've won all 6 games so far. So 2 cup games, 3 league games. So 5 games. Yeah, 5 games, I think, so far. 5 competitive games so far this year, in like the last month. So yeah, we're doing well. They're called Moneyfields FC Women. It's on Twitter somewhere, I'm sure. We're tier 4, so we've got teams like Bournemouth, from the Premier League men's teams. Their club is in our league, their women's team. So we've got, you know, we'll have them and Exeter that are going to be the real threats this year. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if we can get promotion to tier 3, because yeah, that it's the team is good enough. And the support staff around them are really good as well. Not myself, not included. I'm just someone who can take notes on an iPad. So yeah, it's nothing to do with me that they're really good. But
Very
yeah,
modest, very
very very
modest.
modest, and but very honest, sadly. But yeah, it's, you know, as I said earlier on, like it's the fastest growing sport in the world, and the support that anyone can give to their local women's team is really encouraged. You know, we recommend it. Because yeah, that's the only way the game will grow more, is more people just getting down to their local team. So yeah, I hope people do get involved, even if 2 people follow the club's Twitter from this, you know, that's always good. But it's because every little helps at the moment. So, but yeah, it keeps me very busy.
Well, I think when we are going to tag you, we are going to also tag the club, and that's Moneyfields FC Women. And like Tom said, they are actually going for promotion to the, I think the third tier, right?
Yeah, tier 3, yeah.
Yeah, tier 3. So I think most Atleti fans will be behind you, given as a colchonero yourself, we like to support our fellow brothers, and we are going to give a shout out because, like you said, he is very modest because he said he's just doing the iPad and everything, but I believe he does more. And he kind of contributes to their success, even though he will not admit it, but I believe the little he does, it goes to contribute to their success, because not everyone will do that volunteering. And anyway, so we are praying for success of Moneyfields FC Women, and we trust you guys will take it to the next level. So we are at the end of the podcast, and talking about Atleti Femenino B, they kind of lost their second game against Deportivo La Coruña. It's not bad. One win and one defeat, one win at home and one defeat away. It's not actually very bad, but well, we believe it's actually they are at a level where it's profitable for the first team, where players can easily make a jump. So that's great. So Tom, it's been fantastic talking about women's football. I don't want to say soccer, because I know a lot of fans going to. You know, you have that separation between soccer and football. So if
Yeah,
I say Wusu,
it's definitely not soccer.
okay, it's football. So I think I'll just go FUTFEM. That's
Yeah.
better. So it's been great talking about FUTFEM with you. So also been fantastic having someone who kind of even does something to kind of promote women's football in one way or the other. So Tom, looking forward to having you on the next podcast. Hopefully next month.
Yeah, anytime I can, we can arrange to do it. Let's do it. Like, and let's hope that the Atleti Fem keep producing the results, so we have something positive to talk about.
Yep, hopefully Sheila keeps banging in more goals.
Exactly.
So, okay, dear listeners, if you have listened up to this point, we thank you for listening to the podcast. And remember, never stop believing. Nunca pierde. See you next time.